One moment in time. One moment, and then the next moment, and the next moment. One moment where we choose love, and then the next one, we choose love again. Even when it's difficult, even when it's dark, even when people don't show up the way we think they are supposed to, we choose love. Say that with me. We choose love. Really? We choose kindness, we choose compassion, we choose love. That's what we do here. We remind each other that this moment in time is the only thing we have. Love does not exist yesterday or tomorrow. God does not exist yesterday or tomorrow, but only in this one moment in time. Today is the final in our series that we have been over the last 6 weeks. The power of story to heal and transform. The power of choosing love and telling a story around choosing love that caused us to overcome, to be empowered, to rise above, and to transform. It's the unfolding spiritual narrative that happens one moment and then again and again. It's been an empowering exercise in witnessing. Have you been here for most of them? It's been an empowering exercise in sitting at the altar of our stories, of our lived experience, and transforming. And being fully present to another's truth. And those stories haven't just been here on the platform. That's been the tip of the iceberg. It's been what's going on out there. We're suddenly dropping the veils and the walls and we're getting intimate with each other. Let me tell you where I was. Let me tell you where I am. Let me tell you how I got there and how you can do it too. And today will be no exception to that rule. But I hope we continue it. Because I believe it is the gospel. I can get up here and espouse 1,000 different holy books, but the holy book of you, the holy chapter of you, is how we transform. Gospels being written on the pages of lived experience. There's sacred power in witnessing, yes? There's sacred power in our presence and being fully present to another's truth, to another's hero's journey. We open our hearts to listen deeply, to love boldly, and yes, it has been for every one of the people that's been here in this chair to risk openly. And to know that ministry doesn't have to come refined or in a perfect package, but it is ministry. Because I want my life to empower your life in this moment in time in such a way that there's more of you as there is more of me. To listen, not to fix. We're not here to fix anybody because you're not broken. We're here to honor your journey. We're not here to do anything except I see you, I hear you, I feel you. You matter. Your life experience matters. Your journey matters. Your story matters. You matter. We create space when we do that, don't we? And it may not look like every other church on the planet. I don't care, because what's happening here is healing and it is transformative. Where truth can be spoken and pain can be held in our hands with grace, without impatience, and without judgment. How many people have ever experienced in this room, in this community, a sharing of your heart and your guts on the table without impatience on the other side and without judgment? That in itself is holy, yes? That in itself is sacred when we bear witness to one another and the steps we have taken to become us. We remember in that moment that we are not separate beings. There's only one of us in the room. We are cells within the body of the one expression of God on earth, finding each other, coming back home to each other. And that is holy. We are one life unfolding through many stories, through many gospels, through many experiences. You remember the words that we began this series with from Muriel Rekeser. Let's put them up there and let's say them together. The universe is made of stories, not atoms. We are not this physical experience. We're not what happened to us. We're not our relationships. We're not what we do. We are the stories that transform and elevate the consciousness, elevate the vibration, and allow us all to be at a higher place. How many people remember the show, This Is Us? I loved that show. You know, I have to admit that I used to wonder how my mom could put on a soap opera every single day and watch that soap opera. Well, This Is Us became my soap opera. True confessions. I rushed home Whenever that was on, I think it was Wednesday night, I rushed home because I was invested in the people and the characters. They weren't even real people. They were actors putting on a show, but I would cry, I would weep, I would celebrate, I would smile, and I would rush to the TV set to be invested in the lives of people, in particular, Randall. Randall was my brother from another mother. He had all kinds of wonderful potential, but he also wrestled with his humanness. That's what the stories do. I want us to be a community that rushes in to turn on the TV of Tara's life and go, what's happening now? The good, the bad, and the ugly, to be present to Michael's life, to Chris's life, and to go, I am a part of your unfolding. That is holy, sacred work. And it's a heck of a lot more entertaining at times than a TV show. And the good thing is it doesn't just happen on Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock. It's happening 24/7, 365. God is happening at the point of us. Yes? This is us. Say that with me.
This is us.
Breathe that in. This us is holy and it is sacred. The stories told from this platform are just the tip of the iceberg. Just the tip of the iceberg of what's been going on as God has been revealed in this community. I'm saying we're going to end that series today, but keep sharing. Keep sharing. Keep listening. Keep feeling into the us that is the narrative of our unfolding spiritual journey. We behold the divine in each other. Yes? When we speak our own truth, when we stand here or sit here vulnerably, we speak our truth into the field, we are touched by the divine, by the consciousness of the friends and the family that are around us. Don't take that lightly. When we name the ways Spirit has moved through my life and Judy's life and Ron's life and everybody's life to give voice to the living presence of God doing business on earth as us. This is us. We give thanks for the courage to sit in a chair and to speak. And there hasn't been one person, including the lady that's going to come up here in a minute, that was really comfortable with sitting there and putting their guts on the table. We also give thanks for the compassion to receive, the love, the compassion, and the understanding to sit as witness and to put our ears on our heart open and receptive at the altar of us in the telling. In the listening, we build a sacred sanctuary of authenticity. That is as healing as anything I can say from this platform. As healing as any gospel I can read from, as any scripture. It's a sacred circle of healing that we call we. We witness each other in love. We witness each other, our good, our bad, and all of the everything in between. That's all we can ask of ourselves here. And sometimes it's rough around the edges. Have you noticed that? Sometimes it's a little uncomfortable. But we sit in the fire and allow ourselves to be refined. We witness each other in unity. We witness each other in a sense of oneness. We witness each other in a deep sense of faith that something good is happening. And when we do that, our stories become bridges. Anybody notice the world needs a lot more bridges these days? And this is going to be construed as completely political, and if you want to do that, go ahead. Maybe it is. I want Unity North to be the Department of Peace. Yes. I want this community to be the Department of Compassion, of Understanding, of Peace, of Forgiveness, of Love, and all that is good and holy. So rather than cursing what somebody else is doing, let's just up our game. By sharing our stories more readily and knowing that the us that is us is needed, it is necessary, it is important. Our listening becomes good medicine. Your listening, your witness is medicine, and our community becomes a place where souls heal, where the planet heals, because here is a place we are seen. Here is a place we are heard and held. Here is a place where we are recognized. As we started this series, we remember the quote by Tahir Shah. Let's put it up there and let's read it together. Stories are a communal currency of humanity. Our greatest treasure exists in the us, in the we. Our greatest abundance and prosperity. Yes, we teach abundance and prosperity. It's the Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. You open the portal by putting your guts and your story on the table and then putting your ears on for somebody else to do the same. That is our abundance. I'm going to let this video introduce you to our guest today who has the guts to come up here and share her story. This is a little bit about it that I'll use as a context for our interview.
I was very independent as a child. At the young age of 7, I was an equestrian and I rode horses, and my horse Jarful dug a hole of the front door of the stall. And when I walked out, my cowboy boot got caught and I went face down and hit the front of my brain. We saw the impact, which was emotional dysregulation. And so I spent my lifetime understanding emotions, behaviors. I became very observant. Why are people feeling the way that they feel? And I was very intuitive. I understood natural health. I was a bodybuilder. I was benching 185. But it wasn't until I was 50 years old that I really understood really innately who I was, because I had all these signals from childhood up until that time that I, of course, like everybody else, ignored. Shortly after both parents had passed 18 months apart, I went on disability. I was sleeping on the couch, couldn't move, I was sedentary. I ended up with 54 chronic conditions at the end of the game. And they started coming in and being my guides. It's your innate ability, it's your divine right to hear God, spirit, source energy, Jesus. You choose. Your higher power is love. Everything's rooted in love. I used plant and energy-based healing, from poisonous pills to plants and prayers, because that's what we all have to do if we want to live our best life. We're here to reframe mental health for the world. If you have a diagnosis or label as bipolar, schizophrenia, narcissistic, Alzheimer's, what I'm here to tell you is all those things are just labels that the Western Medical Club uses to create a revenue stream. I'm here to give you another option. We help that dark energy find the light. And I created this concept called the Place of Peace. It's a quick and easy way to bring yourself back into balance using nature's goodness, using God's goodness, divine's goodness. Because life is a lesson. When we can become self-aware about what it is that we're doing, how we're being perceived, life becomes beautiful. The single most important thing is forgiving yourself and forgiving others, because they are doing the best they can. You're doing the best you can at any point in time. We're all on the journey.
Please welcome to the platform Reverend Jody L. Susan. So Jody, welcome, and thank you for the courage to sit here in this seat. Jody teaches a lot around the planet, and I wanted to ask her to start in This Is Where I Was, to spend time. And she says she wants to go quickly to where she is now. But I would like you, Jody, to talk about the brain damage that you had and the results of your life as a very young child that you had to experience.
So thank you, and thank you everybody for being here today. So one of the things you said was risk, openly, right? And I played a little small this morning, so I'll play out. It's difficult to say what I'm going to tell you, so if you're sensitive like I am, put a suit of armoir. Run you, not armor, but armoire, love. So because of that fall, I damaged the prefrontal cortex of the brain, which is your executive center. So that's what runs your show. But I also damaged the occipital lobe, right? Because you hit the front, it gets the back, right? And so I didn't understand why I couldn't read. And words were jumping all over the page. And I have a family of brilliant siblings. And I mean, really smart. And my dad's looking at me going, really? Like, what happened to number four? Because they thought I could only be the entertainer, right? Like, just be silly. And because of being told that I could only be the entertainer and being dismissed for bringing joy, which, as I was telling Lorelai earlier today, that's what my last name means. In Hebrew, it means joy. And I lost it.
So you have a child that has this desire to bring joy, but you cannot read. What were the labels that you as a child had to deal with?
And I made notes this time. So I was labeled stupid, right? So I can't read. I'm in the third grade. And I have a letter from Miss Wallachin, my teacher, who said to my mom and dad, you know, she's finally learning to write complete sentences. And by any standard in the third grade, I should be able to do that. My best friend Renee sat me down and showed me where to put commas, semicolons, parentheses, and things of that nature. She took me aside and helped me. The label was also, I was mentally ill. The misdiagnosis was bipolar disorder and schizophrenia because I fell down, I tore my rotator cuff, and they said the pain was all in my head. And then they would not do any diagnostics. I begged for diagnostics. They said no. And they sent me to a psychiatrist. Now, my boyfriend had just died from cancer. He was 29.
How many years did you have to deal with this kind of labeling and pain?
All my life. I mean, until I turned 50. So I didn't think I was smart until I was 55. I'm going to be 62 next month. So, yeah, I'm happy to be living. Like, that's an accomplishment.
So you mentioned in the video emotional dysregulation. What does that mean, and what were the consequences of that experience?
Okay, so for one, I couldn't have a conversation with anyone without creating a fight or an argument. Wow, the list is long. So, you know, I'd be throwing, I don't know if my sister's here, she was gonna show, but we got in a fight one day, and I took a, I was born Jewish before I, yeah, so we had bagels, and it was frozen. Yeah, I threw it. If you've ever been hit by a frozen bagel, it's not so good. So, just gonna say. Here's the thing, I wasn't listening. You ever with somebody and you're speaking to them and you know they're not there, right? Because I wasn't there, and we didn't talk about this morning. I had a fracture, not only did I hit my brain, but I had a fractured heart and a fractured soul. And because I had a fractured heart and a fractured soul, I was out of body. So I wasn't present in my own body, which means I didn't remember much of anything I said or did. And so if you would say something to me a nanosecond later, I have no clue what you said, which is why I probably couldn't read or anything else.
Can you speak a little bit about how that showed up in your family life in regards to your brother, your siblings, your parents, your father?
So it was a war zone. That's how I've always categorized it. So this one's going to be a little bit difficult. I'm just going to tell you, I send a lot of grace to my father and to my brother for what they did for my ascension. And my dad grew up without a dad, so he didn't have a model for what dads look like. And so Tuesdays, to make sure that we were in line for the rest of the week, we all got hit with a belt. That started at age 4.
Dick, can I ask, and I know this is really difficult, and you want to rush to the good love that you offer your dad, but I want to camp in that, because everyone in this room right here has felt judged and labeled and abused because you were dealing with a certain condition. Would you label what happened in your home certainly as physical abuse, but with your challenges, with the inability to process that emotion and to even read, that you were in an abusive environment?
All day. So, and physical abuse and verbal abuse are equally damaging. So I had to learn how to tame my tongue. And because when I realized how mean I become, I had learned how to fight. I had learned how to be a warrior. I had learned how to attack somebody before listening to somebody.
How many people in this room have learned that same lesson? Gone through that same experience? I will hurt you before you hurt me. That story connects us. We all have at some level. Speak a little bit more about that.
So I made a cake. I write about this in more detail in the book. I had someone I was dating. I was 21 years old. I make a cake. And I put a label on the cake, a card, because it was a birthday present for the guy I was dating. And my brother came down and ate the cake. Yeah, I was kind of mad. So we kind of got in a fight. There was no bloodshed, but I had a sword. I had a sword. We got rid of the sword, and he strangled me, threw me across the room 10 feet, and the left hip hit the corner of a very sharp table, which rendered me unable to walk. I had the imprints of his hands on my neck for weeks, the bruises. You know, it was a war zone.
Did you have the ability to understand that with this emotional dysregulation, that any of this make any sense to you?
At that time, no, it was all his fault, right? That was my thinking. It's all his fault. It's all my dad's fault. It's all everybody else's fault. Blame, shame, you know, like I was blaming everybody else for my situation.
How many years did you have that kind of mindset?
A long time. A long time. I honestly don't know how long, but it was a long time until my brother took me. So I guess it was 1989. I was born in 63. So 1989, the same brother who strangled me took me to Landmark Education. And some of you may be familiar, the Reader's Digest version to that is to take the past, put it in the past, and create a future based out of nothing at all.
What does that take from you to do that?
Forgiveness. Like, I had to forgive him. Look, my brother was beat up as a child by my dad. He died of a brain tumor. And today's his yard site, which is the memorial of his death. And the book that I wrote originally was made for him. And so there's no coincidence. Yeah.
One of the things that you said in the video is the single most important thing is to forgive. Who did you forgive, and what organizations or people did you have to forgive in order for you to move from where you were to where you are today?
So I had to start with the self. I had to forgive myself first, because I had to forgive myself for poisoning myself. I had to forgive myself for having a loud mouth. You know, now you say, at least I use my mouth. It's still loud, but you know, sending some better energy.
Can you said something, poisoning myself. Can you clarify what you mean by that?
Yeah, so they put me on 50 drugs.
To treat what?
To treat the misdiagnosis of bipolar disorder and schizophrenia. They also put me through 10 clinical trials. I mean... The system's pretty interesting, right, to say the least.
It is interesting, but you said, Jody, you had to forgive yourself for taking the medicine.
Well, so the doctor prescribed it, but I bought it. I opened the cap. I put it in my mouth, and I took it down. So I'm eventually 100% accountable for the action. I could have said no, But then they wouldn't be able to reframe mental health for the world today. So,
so what does it take from a human being who had every right to be a victim in the journey? I can say I maybe forgive the medical community, but the first thing you said was forgive myself. What does that take from a human being? You mentioned in the video that you began to remember who you are.
Yes.
Yeah, you began to know who you were, and you started getting signals, and you developed intuition as a result. Is that part of your journey from here to there?
Yeah, so let me answer a couple of those questions. I just need a moment. So what did it take? It took tenacity. It took a desire to want something different than what I had at that point in time. And quite frankly, my oldest brother demonstrated that for me. He knew what he did didn't work, and he paved the path. He modeled a new behavior for not just me, but my entire family to do things differently. And then the other question was...
Let's stay with there.
Okay.
What about your father? Was there forgiveness of your father?
Oh, totally. I mean, so... And this was before they died, right? So we were in relationship. My dad grew up without a dad. His dad had TB, left the family. He was cleaning fish at the dock to support his own family as like a 6 or 7 year old. And he was raised by the mafia. Well, the mafia, you know, has their own model of the world, which is fine for them. But he brought that model of the world to our family until he learned differently. And he's actually really cool. Like, not only do I forgive him, but he's really cool, he's brilliant, he's creative, and he's funny. I was telling my friend Jen in the front center here that he used to chase my mom around the house with a plate of whipped cream, like for the face, you know. And so he had joy. He liked being humorous.
Was there a part of you that recognized that part of him who had those desires, those emotions, and those feelings, but also those pains and those difficulties? Was there a degree of compassion in seeing your father and your brother and the medical establishment and yourself with different eyes?
Yeah, I mean, because we were all trapped, right? We are all trapped in this paradigm of thinking we're supposed to be a certain way. And we have these behaviors, we have these programs to do things in a way, most of the time to please other people. And it doesn't get us where we need to go, and it's certainly not in alignment with the divine.
So. You mentioned in the video, everything is rooted in love, that your higher power is love. And I believe in our pre-interview, you said that's what you discovered, is I am love. I'm not any of these things. Can you speak about that?
Yeah, I'm not my job, right? I'm not my paycheck. I'm love. And
are you what happened to you?
No. No, that what happened for me, not to me, right, was simply a gift wrapped in strange wrapping paper, right, silver lining, to allow me to lead humanity away from a programmed belief system, which is poisonous pills heal, they don't, to plants and prayers, which is what God intended.
Can you speak, you said something profound there. This isn't what happened to me. Mm-hmm. This is what happened for me.
Yeah, so my model of the world says this. We come down here, we make agreements before we even come down to Earth School. And we agree to who our parents are gonna be, our siblings, and you know, and the list is long. And this happened for not only my ascension to become more self-aware and understand who I am. But that's so I could lead humanity to better understand who you are, the love that you are.
How many years did it take you to get to that awareness?
Well, when my dad died, August 10th, 2012, he came to me and said, people tell you who they are, it's up to you to listen. And that's when I really understood that these messages were not false. See, I had been getting messages from the universe since I was a child. I mean, since I can ever remember.
Would you call that your intuition?
Yeah, it's your intuition. It's hearing your higher self, higher power, and yes, intuition. But the thing is, I dismissed myself, and then when they put me on all the drugs, I'm like, I'm certainly not going to tell them now. They're not going to let me out of the hospital, right?
So can I contextualize this, that you were tapping into higher dimensions and vibrations and truths and spirits, that it was labeled mentally ill? Mm-hmm. Something's broken. Something's wrong. You should not be doing this. And so let's drug you up and mask it.
Which is what they're doing to light workers, right? And I was disabled, as we mentioned, for 4 years. And the disability, being disabled, was a gift. Why? Well, because it allowed me to slow down. And I was a practicing Jew. I was going to turn 53. And I was going to have a bat mitzvah, because I did not have one, at the age of 13. And my mom came in, and she brought Jesus with her. It's like, you know, it's kind of a little party up there. And so me being disabled slowed me down enough to hear them. And what they said to me was, you need to go see a neurologist. And I said, but why? I said, I have a mental health issue. Well, a neurologist works with your nervous system in your brain. Oops, had no idea.
So was there something going on from age 7 to age 53 that was discarded, was kicked to the side, was not recognized, and at 53 you began to recognize that none of these things that you've been told about yourself, not the least of which is that you were dumb or stupid, that you were actually intuitive?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I hate to use the word crazy, but it seems apropos.
You said something, and I have two more questions for you. Mm-hmm. We are here to reframe mental health for the world. How do you reframe mental health, and what work are you currently doing to continue that journey for yourself and for others?
Thank you. So first thing, the environment, going to the first question, I was exposed to neurotoxins. So neurotoxins are in our food supply, our water supply, our cleaning supplies, our hair care, name it. It's all filled with neurotoxins, and it's not allowed in other countries. So what's the reframe? Because that's what was the root cause, was all these neurotoxins. A neurotoxin is something that impacts your nervous system, which causes emotional dysregulation or, you know, acting inappropriately. So the reframe is, I've sent my book and a 4-page letter, yeah, I was not short about it, to Bobby Kennedy, and asked him to mandate testing, because I asked for testing and they said, no, there is no test. You have bipolar disorder and we can just tell. You have schizophrenia and we can just tell. There was no test. Imagine that. The mental health community is the only doctor that doesn't look at the organ that they treat. And let that sink in just for the moment. Okay, so the reframe includes this. There's 50% of us are missing a specific gene that sends the happy hormones, dopamine and serotonin, sends those signals. 50% of us are missing that. Just that one test alone will drive your happiness, drive your joy, if you figure that out. 90% of us have parasites. A parasite is its own entity. So you can test for that and, you know, clear that, because it makes you depressed. It makes you sad. It makes you angry. Actually makes you volatile. It makes you volatile. So I had parasites. I advocate for doing those testings. The third thing is food sensitivity.
So let me ask you real quickly. So part of your journey from where you were to where you are was standing in your power, in your strength, to ask against the systems, to ask for what you knew to be true, to let the external reality sit secondary to the internal awareness and truth. Yes?
Yeah, but even so, I ignored a lot of it for years still, because I had a lot of cognitive dissonance around it. Like, you know, I was so used to dismissing me, because that's what I was taught.
Right there. How many people have ever dismissed yourself because of external realities that told you something about yourself? We share that. Let's meet at the altar of empowerment. And Jody has taken this abuse, taken these difficulties and these labels, and written an entire book on it. How did I get from here to there? And here's how you can do it too. It is vitally important. Let me ask you this question. Is there any diagnosis or any label that cannot be overcome through other avenues? And what are those avenues?
So my belief system is everything can be healed with plants and prayers. Our belief system will drive our outcomes. So if you believe you cannot do something, you are right. But if you believe you can do something, you are right.
That's the work that we do here. That's the storytelling that we do here. Last question. What is the most important thing in your story, in your life, for this congregation to teach us? The most important thing.
I'm still going to give you three. Sorry.
Go quick, because we're running out of time.
Okay. So number one, you know, forgiveness, right? We have to forgive people. We can't take what other people are doing personally. We like to be offended, but the truth of the matter is people are just running a program, and so we have to pause and shift our thinking when you catch yourself going into that mode, and lead with love. And so, you know, don't personalize what people are doing. Forgive them. Lead with love. And if you can't lead with love, which there have been days I couldn't, I asked God to do it for me. So I gave it to a higher power.
It sounds like a pretty good recipe, a pretty good prescription for going from where you are to where you can be. Lead with love. Lead with forgiveness. And I think you said a number of times in our pre-interview, people are doing the best that they can at any given moment. I want to thank you for doing the best that you can and being the final story that we shared from this platform.
Thank you.
Will you please give me a round of applause for Reverend Jody Soussan?
Thank you.